This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Creatine. It seems to be the biggest buzzword in health these days. The talk is everywhere among my friends. Is it in your friendship group, at the gym, on social media, in menopause chats? The claims about creatine are big. It's about muscles, for brains, for menopause and more. But what is the evidence? Today on The Conversation Hour, we will be talking to experts about what's behind the buzz, the evidence base, and the risks. All of the supplementary questions that you might have as well. You can hop on the line now if you have questions about creatine or want to share your story. We will be looking into that. Also, man barks at dog is the headline this morning. Yes, it was one unnerving media moment in a full interview, it must be said, but it has, whether you like it or not, grabbed those headlines. You've probably heard about it by now. Even if you didn't see the whole interview last night, Barnaby Joyce sharply reprimanding his dog in the middle of an interview with Sarah Ferguson on 7:30. So you tell me, what do you make of it? Is it just a media moment and nothing more? Just a sign that the media has it all wrong? A distraction talking about policy. Sarah Ferguson herself said to RAF this morning, it's just a disappointment that that would have distracted from the questions about policy. Maybe it's a very notable moment to you. Maybe you've gleaned something from it. I'd love to hear from you. Is the media just hounding Barnaby Joyce for no reason? Or does it give you pause for thought? Yes, there are the puns. I will put those aside, though, and also we'll put aside the politics of this as well a little later on in the show, because for the record, we don't know if the dog was barking. It must be said, all that Barnaby Joyce said is that it had decided to bail up, which I hadn't quite heard as a term before. But the issue of barking dogs is a real one for many people. So just by the by, we thought we'd take this moment to help you and maybe Barnaby Joyce and bring in Dr. Kate Monument, our animal behaviourist, to talk about how to deal with barking brethren, if that's indeed what it was, maybe discipline in general. Also today, vive la Belgique. It is, in case you didn't know, Belgium's National Day. What are your favourite Belgian experiences? What has grabbed you? Was it Jean-Claude Van Damme? Was it Tintin? Was it the beer? Was it the chocolate? We have skin here in the game at the Conversation Hour, and I'll explain that a little later. But we are talking creatine. We are talking Belgium. But next, will this media moment dog Barnaby Joyce and One Nation?
This is The Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
So is this hype or a howling error from Barnaby Joyce? Just in case you didn't hear it, here is the snippet of that 7:30 interview with Sarah Ferguson last night.
You're defending your leader, but are you really comfortable with where she is taking you?
I think, sit down! Sorry, it's a dog. I have to apologise for this dog, which has decided to bail up.
Don't worry about the dog, just answer the question.
Don't be rude.
So this is the talk this morning, 1300 222 774. What did you make of it? Was it just Barnaby Joyce having a rough day? This on text, I've now watched the entire interview. The story is a total beat up. Why are we talking about this? Barnaby is Barnaby. Richard in Caulfield North, what do you think? Hi, Richard.
Hi. Barnaby is Barnaby. But as I said to your producer, I think it did give away a little bit about him, the way he snapped at his dog. But I was with him in the rising anger inside myself at the way Sarah wasn't allowing him to answer the question. And he was repeatedly trying to get the rest of his, so that he was taken in context, he could say the full sentence, but she wasn't allowing him. So when the dog was, not behaving, he snapped in a way that's probably not indicative of the way he normally would speak to his dog.
Right. So a little bit about the questioning, you think, Richard?
Without a doubt. Like, his anger was building. You could see it. He several times trying to finish his... And Sarah was... And he actually said to him, don't be so rude.
Okay. Richard, thank you. Joining me now is Patricia Karvelas, who's host of Politics Now podcast, to talk about how this might land. PK, it is just one moment in an interview, but people are taking a lot from this, aren't they? How do you think it's going to land?
Well, it's an incredible moment, right? Like, it's one of those moments that is captivating to watch. I've watched it over and over because it's kind of wild, isn't it, in the middle of a kind of flagship show interview with Sarah Ferguson. So I know why we're talking about it, but isn't this just Barnaby being Barnaby? Like, it's absolutely consistent with him. The most consistent, it's not an aberration. It just, for me, another moment of Barnaby Joyce being Barnaby Joyce. I don't know. Like, my dog is sometimes deeply irritating. I'm not that aggressive to my dog because my dog is a very attractive cavoodle and you wouldn't...
Oh, we seem to have... Oh, PK's back. Oh, I think
I
it was...
So you,
the dog must have jumped on your phone, but you've got an embarrassing cavoodle and...
My embarrassing cavoodle is... very distracting. And I think clearly the dog was distracting Barnaby. I have gone back and done some forensic work for you, Mary. When you told me you wanted me to come on your show, I thought, I'm not going to shortchange Mary Guerin. She's an absolute legend of the radio. So I watched the interview again and the dog is barking.
Right.
Because I thought for a while, is he kind of imagining the dog barking? Is the dog really barking? So I did some serious journalism and listened very carefully. The dog is barking. It's clearly distracting him. He kind of barks back at the dog. Then he switches back to... He's kind of a cabaret kind of style interviewee. I mean, I've interviewed Barnaby Joyce in some very elaborate interviews that, you know, are all on the record for anyone to easily Google, and we've had moments too. He's a man who delivers many moments, and that was an incredibly fascinating one. Yes, does it tell you something about his character? I think it does, you know, quick to maybe anger, then quick to not being in anger. All the emotions, all the range, all in one interview.
That's exactly right, and yes, I have heard many of your wild interviews with Barnaby Joyce. So, yes, you... are in there as an interviewer, you know that this might happen, but a lot of people are coming through on text. Look, some people are saying, forget it, let's just stop talking about it altogether. But some people are saying this reflects on character, as you say, and the way people treat dogs is pretty powerful to some people. Is it going to be one of those, I use the word, you know, something that will dog him, but can we take it two steps ahead and say it matters to the perception of Barnaby Joyce, and particularly at this moment in time that seems like an inflection point for One Nation and how they relate to people?
I don't mean to be a contrarian, but
please.
I will be.
You do.
I don't think it's going to be a lasting moment for kind of figuring out what One Nation or Barnaby Joyce is really about. Like, the biggest problem with our focus on this, and I know why we're focusing on it, again, as I say, I'm part of it. I watched it. It's entertaining as well, let's be honest. Like, the whole interaction is kind of like not something you expect when you watch television, is it?
Mm-hmm.
However, it is a distraction from the substance, which is, Do they want to do mass deportations of people if they are to be elected? What do they make of Muslim Australians and their rights in Australia? I mean, these are the substantive issues that Sarah Ferguson was rightly going to, and this is absolutely a distraction. So if some of your listeners are texting in saying this is a distraction, I'm with them. Of course it is.
Well, some are saying that it was...
a million Muslims is very different, isn't it?
And on the other hand, there are some texters saying it was a deliberate distraction from Barnaby Joyce. I think Sarah Ferguson herself said, I think that's a step too far. You don't set up your dog, surely.
Well, I think that's an interesting one. Now, that verges on conspiracy theory, right? Like,
indeed.
Did Barnaby Joyce organise for his dog to bark so that he could respond in a sort of cabaret-style Barnaby Joyce moment so that we, the stupid vapid media, can concentrate on that and not on the substance?
It's 5D
it's
chess
so
from Barnaby Joyce.
I don't believe it, but I love it.
I love it. As his media advisor, would you just say, just pick up the dog, bring him into the camera, PK?
As his media advisor, I would probably not, you know, maybe a little bit less aggressive, but I don't think it hurts him that much. No.
No. Patricia Karvelas, it's always great to pick your brain, contrarian or not, maybe even better that way. I love it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
That's Patricia Karvelas, host of Politics Now podcast and general federal politics guru. Hank, in how long? What do you think about this conversation?
Look, I just can't believe that we're spending this time talking about a guy telling his dog to sit down. I'm just
doesn't matter to you.
I just don't want to listen to the news. There's too much, you know, crap going on in the world these days. I mean, this latest business with Canada and the US, you know, they've got to sit down and talk. Well, who started this crap?
A lot to talk about. Maybe that's why we're using dogs as a distraction, Hank.
Well, potentially. I mean, I was in business and I visited a farm one day and a bloke looked at me when I was approaching him and he said, come here, stupid. And I said, what are you talking to me? He said, no, I'm talking to the dog. That's his name, stupid. I mean...
At that point, if you've named your dog stupid, Hank, then, you might get some of those looks. Thank you. Thank you for calling. And Joy from Greenvale, what do you think about all this discussion?
Oh, Mary, I love Sarah Ferguson. We all love Sarah Ferguson, but I think she actually got it wrong. When the dog was doing whatever it was doing, and I'm not exactly sure if it was just barking because I've only listened to it once, but I heard him very briefly, and he cut himself short saying something like he was just trying to have a go or something like that. He cut it short. But I think as a very experienced dog owner, I think you have to be short and sharp with your dog at times. Otherwise, they're just not going to... And you've got to be short and sharp. And I'm sorry, but I think Sarah got it wrong.
Right. Well, look, Joy, thank you for calling in and thanks for those thoughts. Later on, we are going to be putting all the politics aside and we will actually talk about how to quiet a barking or misbehaving dog because quite seriously, this is an issue for people and for neighbours as well. So we'll put that to our animal behaviourists. Sometimes, Joy says, we need to be short and sharp with our dogs. We will discuss that on The Conversation Hour. But coming up next, creatine. We wanted to be talking about this because it is enjoying quite the moment, this supplement. There's a lot of hype, but what is the evidence? And what are your stories? That's next on The Conversation Hour.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Creatine is in the supermarkets, it's in social media, it's on the tongues, literally, of a lot of people that you might have in your life, young and old, particularly women. We are going to be looking at this with a critical eye. We're going to be looking at the evidence base because there are a lot of claims out there. I just want to lay the groundwork for everyone so we've got some shared knowledge. If you're wondering, what is this? Creatine, it's an amino acid derivative. We naturally produce it in our bodies and that gets about 50% of our requirements. And till recently, we've just thought, look, the rest can be produced through the food we eat and having a healthy, balanced diet. Well, that's still what everyone believes. But there is this industry now that is promoting creatine and has a lot of claims as well. I want to hear from you and your stories. Just a reminder that we can't give personal medical advice. This is about looking at this supplement of du jour and all of the claims behind it. Louise Burke is a sports dietitian with 40 years of experience in elite athletes. She worked with the Australian Institute of Sport for 30 years, was with Olympic teams and has an Order of the Medal of Australia as well. So she knows what she's talking about, particularly in terms of the origin of this supplement. And she joins me now. Hi, Louise. Thank you for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here.
So I think this is a bit fascinating to hear just how long creatine's been quote unquote out there and its journey from elite sports to the gym, now to the supermarkets. Can you tell us how it all came to prominence?
Well, I can remember the Barcelona Olympics back in 1992, and there were some very successful English athletes who, after they'd won their medals, talked about a new product they'd been provided with or had been working with prior to their competition. And shortly after that, there was the first paper that appeared in a scientific journal showing that if you took extra amounts of this creatine product, then you could increase the amount that was stored in your muscle, and it had very effective benefits for sports performance. In some cases, it was helping the athlete train harder. In other cases, it was actually helping them with the performance of their competition.
Mm.
So it goes back that far. But, I mean, it's been known about for a century with as a product, as a metabolite, and as a part of both muscle and brain and some other tissues. We've known about it for a long time. It was just the concept that we weren't maximally storing it in those different tissues, and that could be changed by taking in extra from the diet. That was the new thing from the 90s.
Mm. So today we're looking at the evidence base for all of this. Would you say that when it comes to that sports use in younger people for those purposes, the science has been good since Barcelona, that you've got enough to work with, and that differs from, for instance, what we might apply to older people?
Well, I think the studies that have been done have focused on sports performance, and there are hundreds, you know, probably 1,000 really good studies that have shown both that is the success in increasing the amount in the muscle, and that is then associated with better capacity to do repeated high-intensity sprints or bouts with short recovery intervals. So whether you think of that as resistance training or whether you think about it as the kind of interval work that many athletes do in training or even during their game, if you think of team sports and racket sports, then having more of this creatine, particularly the phosphocreatine that it can be become within the muscle, definitely helps with the recovery of that type of exercise.
And I've heard that described as like a battery pack of creatine once it gets into that state. And that it's a battery pack of energy for your body.
It is. It's helping. The phosphocreatine is a energy source that's very important for that short, sharp kind of work. And when it's used up, it needs to be replaced. And so having higher levels in the muscle means that the recovery, getting it back to a usable amount, is quicker. And it means that the athlete can do more of that kind of work before they fatigue. So there's definitely proof, and it's been then translated into sports performance of many different types that give us a lot of confidence that it's a useful thing for athletes to be taking if it's part of their training or competition characteristics.
Mm.
But then we think about other people need to be doing exercise, particularly older people who are trying to hang on to their muscle mass or increase their muscle mass, and they may not have done a lot of exercise or, you know, specific sports performance.
Indeed, there's a lot of people in their 40s and 50s now taking up that active resistance training. 1300 222 774, if this is you, if you are wondering about creatine as well, your experiences, good or bad, I'd love to hear from you. 1300 222 774, because we're looking at something that has jumped up in popularity, but a lot of people are not quite aware of the amount of evidence there is out there. I'm speaking with Dr. Louise Burke, who's sports dietitian of many decades from a sporting point of view. So, Louise, we've got it now within that larger population, people who aren't elite sports people. Let's get down to basics of what, you know, the rest of us, not the non-elite, should be doing when it comes to creatine. Just first off, what would you say about any evidence that it's unsafe to begin with, that it's toxic in any degree or dosages? What's the recommendation out there?
Well, I think, again, because we've got such a large body of work from the 90s and we've had a large number of people been taking it since the 90s, we can be pretty clear that it's a safe product to take if you're taking a pure source of creatine. Now, that doesn't mean that every supplement that is a creatine supplement, or every supplement that has creatine within it, is safe, because there are manufacturing practices within the supplement industry that aren't ideal. But if you're buying from a reputable company, and we generally promote that people buy creatine as a pure powder rather than buying a supplement that's got a bit of this and a bit of this and a bit of this. And
those pre-workout supplements that seem to have a bit of everything, you're saying don't have those?
I'm saying the better way to get creatine is to buy a pure creatine monohydrate product from a reputable company. And in particular, we like those that have been batch tested by an independent company to show that they don't contain other impurities or contaminants that might, in the case of elite athletes, cause an anti-doping rule violation. But it, for the general public, is also a good thing to use those types of products, because you know that company has taken an extra step to make sure that its manufacturing practices are good.
And let's make that clear for people. There are two companies that do this batch testing in Australia, and if you're going down the supermarket aisle and you take something from the shelf, you can actually look on there and find logos, is that right?
Yes. So there's two companies, Hester and Informed Sport, that do this kind of work in Australia. And so if a manufacturing company that makes creatine has invested in getting batch testing done, then I think that's the better product to take, because it shows the commitment by that company to be able to have an independent verification that their product is free of contamination.
1300 222 774. We're talking about creatine, and very soon we're going to be speaking with someone from Gene Hales to talk about its connection with menopause, because we've heard a lot of those connections. What is the evidence? But Louise Burke, just before I let you go, there are a lot of people, whether for menopause or other reasons, dosing beyond the recommendation as well. There's a standard warning to say, look, if you've got an underlying condition, absolutely, especially with kidney disease, you need to go to your GP to get this sorted out. In terms of people taking it into their own hands about the dosing, what would you have to say?
Well, I would always say, regardless of whether you know things about dosing, you should be discussing your use of supplements with a practitioner like a sports dietitian or a sports physician that has knowledge of this. And so you've thought through both the reason for using it and the correct way of using it. There's two different ways in which people can load up. They can either do a slow load, where you take 5 grams a day continually, and after about a month, you'll have saturated the muscle, and then you just keep taking your 5 grams a day and it stays elevated. Or if you want to do it more quickly, in 4 or 5 days, if you're taking 20 grams a day, what you do is you take 4 times your 5 grams spread over the day, then you can load it up so that it's maxed out within, 4 or 5 days. So that's the way that we recommend people do it, for the muscle point of view. But I should point out that there's now interest in what's happening in the brain, because the brain also stores creatine. And there is an emerging interest in whether we can load the brain to help it to be able to cope with stressful situations such as concussion, or maybe some of the degenerative brain diseases of older age. Now, this is very new, and it would appear that if creatine is to be stored in the brain, it might have to be taken in larger doses, like 10 grams a day to get the same effect. So we're not saying that 5 grams is what everybody needs, no more should ever be taken, but we're also saying that this is a new line of discovery, and it's very premature to say that we should be doing it this way for the brain. But in 10 years' time, if you ask me the same question, I might be able to say, well, we now have very good evidence about it.
Might is, I guess, the word there to note. Thank you so much for guiding us through those aspects of creatine today, Louise.
Thank you very much.
That's Dr. Louise Burke, sports dietitian of much experience there. Very soon we will be talking about the effect on the brain, brain fog, and other menopausal symptoms. Andrea in Ringwood, what did you want to say?
Hi. My daughter actually has been diagnosed with a creatine deficiency disease. So I just thought I'd give a shout out to those conditions. So there are three conditions, creatine deficiency diseases, as you've talked about, creatine being produced from two different enzymes. So if a person is lacking one of those enzymes, they have a creatine deficiency disease because their body can't produce creatine. And my daughter has a condition called creatine transporter deficiency. So she's on high doses of creatine. And I can attest to the impact that a lack of creatine has on a person. So kids with creatine deficiency experience intellectual impairments, expressive language disorders, seizures, low muscle tone, issues with digestive system related to absorption and also the muscles in our digestive system.
So for you, you know, whether it's a buzzword or not, that is not the situation. It's not a choice.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Life-changing. Yeah, and she's taking high-dose creatine supplements. On the safety side of things, her kidney function is monitored annually by her specialist just to make sure that she's processing that properly. But interacting with a lot of creatine families, well, there are a few hundred of us in the world, so pretty rare, but we get together.
But it is there.
Working on that, yes.
Yeah, and creatine in that sense, as I say, is no longer one of those choices, lifestyle choices, if you like, but really important. Thank you, Andrea, for that insight as well. And we do have a lot of texts and callers who didn't want to go to air, but who are saying, look, they have concerns about the impacts on the kidneys. It is part of the basic warning that if you have underlying kidney conditions, creatine is definitely something that you need to be talking with your GP about and warned against. Now, Adrian, you wanted to speak about creatine as well. What's been your experience?
Oh, well, I've been using it for probably well over 18 months now, and I've dropped about 23 kilos of fat in that time, just been very rigorously exercising. But I did try it out for a little while. I tried a high dose. I'm on about 8 to 10 grams a day, but I tried a high dose for the whole brain function thing. And I actually found the days, I tried it for a couple of weeks, and I started actually getting a bit foggy.
Right.
So I stopped doing it. So that was strange. I was finding myself lost for words by the end of the day in conversation. And I was having some GI issues as well from the higher doses. I don't think creatine's really that great for your digestive system at really high doses, even when splitting it. But yeah. That was my experience with the brain stuff anyway.
Adrian, that's really interesting. Thank you for your call. Again, it goes back to this being very much about the evidence being young when it comes to some of these issues. You're listening to The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. Joining me now is Dr. Sonia Davison, who's clinical fellow at Jean Hales for Women's Health. And we wanted to speak with you, Sonia, because menopausal symptoms, including brain fog, they're some of the things that are bandied about as being very much the reason for taking creatine. Can I just ask you, Sonia, what your experience has been in terms of the popularity of creatine when it comes to your patients?
In the last 1 or 2 years, there's been just really an explosion. I always ask my ladies, what are you taking? And I'm surprised because I don't see elite sportswomen that often. I'm surprised that the general lay population are grabbing creatine and have been taking it. And I wonder if it's also related to weight loss with injectable weight loss preparations that more menopausal women will be using when they gain weight.
What's the connection there? Because they're going and doing weights at the same time?
Well, that's we want them to be. Mm. When you're using an injectable weight loss preparation, you will lose muscle. So we want, and you will lose 0.6% muscle mass as a woman per year from midlife. So it's a perfect storm, and we want those women, yes, to be doing exercise and regaining their muscle and not losing it as they get older, and creatine may be part of that. So I think that's where the popularity has come in.
Mm. We're talking about creatine, 1300 222 774, a lot of claims. What's the evidence? Sonia, when it comes to brain fog, sleep, maybe even depression, things that we think of as menopausal or premenopausal symptoms, what's the evidence when it comes to creatine?
Well, there's some really interesting studies, and as you say, it is in the foundling stage, but there's been some lovely studies about depression and actually adding this to antidepressant treatment, and mood seemed to do quite a lot better when women were on this, even for about 8 weeks. women have 70 to 80% less creatine in their bodies compared with men. So we actually think that women might get a better benefit from creatine compared with men because men have a lot more in their bigger muscle mass. So that's another thing to
think
about.
Is that from a certain age?
No, it's just general. We are slighter people with less muscle mass, depending on the individual, of course, but we have 70 to 80% less. And women have 2 to 3 times the rate of depression compared with men. So there's some beautiful thoughts going through my mind that creatine might help because really it's just the fundamental thing we need to make energy. And whether that's brain energy, muscle energy, or even hormonal energy, again, we need more research, but it's very exciting, this area.
So you're talking about some dotted lines, if you like, between some of this research and good outcomes. What would you have to say to people listening in terms of best practice, what you should be doing with creatine? Is it, you know, grabbing something off the supermarket shelf and, as Adrian was saying, just sort of trying out different dosages? As from your point of view, Sonia Davison, what do you recommend people do?
It's about balance and it's about being safe. And it's about using your healthy body as the machine that it's meant to be. We need to not eat too much. We do need to be doing exercise, including resistance training, etc. And we don't want to abuse our body and just reach for something from the shelf. We also don't want to use creatine generally when we're less than 18 years of age, in pregnancy, with kidney or liver problems, and with some medications. So just please be safe. Don't think that you're the doctor. Get some very good advice, even if it's from a sports nutritionist, etc. And the dose for general population would be 3 to 5 grams per day. And I want to wow you with this statement that herring is thought to be the best source in dietary.
I did not see that coming. Okay, so instead of creatine and all of this talk about evidence, just get some herring.
Herring, beef, pork, salmon, tuna, chicken, they're the best sources. So if you're a postmenopausal vegetarian woman who is not doing much exercise and has a slight body build, you can definitely think that creatine might be something she might think about. But of course, again, it's about the way we live, what we eat, and all sorts of factors in our life. It's about balance. And it's also about being excited about something that might benefit some people. But of course, we need more research.
We definitely need more research. Dr. Sonia Davison, thank you for shedding some light on that today.
Pleasure. Thanks.
Dr. Sonia Davison is with Jean Hales for Women's Health. And yes, of course, the takeaway being talk to your doctor, of course, and look out for that batch testing logo and concentrate on the good diet. Apparently, herring, that's the way to go. Very healthy. Don't know about your breath. I'm going to try it anyway. You're listening to The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. Now, coming up next, we're very excited here about what today is. I was an exchange student in Wallonia. My producer, Amber, lived in Flanders. You know what I'm talking about, Belgium. We love Belgium. What are your Belgium stories? What made you fall in love with Belgium? Was it moule frit? Was it Tintin? Was it mannequin piss? You know it if you know it. That is coming up. But next, we thought we'd take a moment today. No, we're not talking about politics in this, but how do you stop a dog from barking anyway?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Yes, and this morning there have been those headlines about Barnaby Joyce and a dog. Let's put all that aside. I think we've talked that through, but there are many problems that people do have with barking dogs, with discipline. What are the guidelines for this? We thought it was another moment to welcome Dr. Kate Mornament, who's an animal behaviourist and answers so many of these questions for us. Thanks for joining us, Kate.
Thanks for having me, Mary.
Now, maybe we can take a little listen again. Now, this is not about politics. It's about a human interaction between Barnaby Joyce and his dog. For people who missed it last night, let's have a listen.
Sit down! Sorry. It's a dog.
Don't worry about the dog. Just answer the question.
Don't be rude. Don't be rude.
That was Barnaby Joyce. Just to give you some context as to tone of voice, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about politics here. Kate, what did you take from that human-dog interaction there?
Well, when I saw it, I was a little bit taken aback by the severity of his reaction to whatever his dog was doing at the time. I mean, we all get caught in moments of frustration, but from my knowledge and experience, screaming at a dog like that is not very effective in modifying their behaviour long term.
It's interesting you should say that. There's been texts I've been watching coming all morning saying, look, who hasn't yelled at a dog, even just in passing? Here's a man who's on live TV. We heard from PK earlier before. Barnaby Joyce is a colourful character. He probably says good morning in a, you know, really boisterous way. So what is the line that we should be considering normal here?
Look, I think screaming at a dog or your child in that sort of way is probably more of an old-fashioned way to deal with behaviour that you don't really want to see. We've learnt a lot in the last 20 years when it comes to training dogs and interacting with them and the most effective ways to get the behaviour that you want. And what we've learnt is that positive reinforcement is not only more effective because it gets the desired behaviour more quickly, but the dog enjoys a better relationship with you. If you scream at your dog all the time in an effort to stop them doing something you don't want them to do, they can get scared of you and it can damage the relationship and the trust that they have in you. So, you know, we all have our moments and that's part of being a human, but we really want to focus on teaching our dogs the most humane and positive way that we can. And it also translates to how we raise children now too. We're encouraged not to yell and scream at our children. Again, we all have our moments. We want to try and do it in a positive way.
And in these pressure moments, I guess, you know, this is a very particular circumstance. It's live TV. Who knows what the dog was actually doing, which we still don't really know for the record. What are your tips for in the moment if you've got a dog that is, you know, I guess really losing it in some way?
Yeah, look, it's really hard to deal with something in the moment when you're under a lot of pressure. So my advice is to, you know, think about those moments where you are under pressure and try and set your dog up for success. So if that was me doing a live TV interview and I had a dog that had been barking or misbehaving prior, I'd just make sure that they were out of the picture, that they were maybe somewhere else away from me so that that wouldn't impact that high pressure moment. In the moment, it's really difficult. He probably acted you know, without thinking it through, obviously, and that's what's happened. But yeah, I would try and make sure that my dog is well trained so that those things are less likely to occur.
You're listening to Dr. Kate Mornament, who's animal behaviourist. We're just taking a moment today to reflect on barking dogs. And Kate, there's text lines coming through. Look, what do you do about barking dogs in general? We could have a whole long segment on this. There are, you know, dogs who like to bark, some who don't so much. What's your general advice when your dog is barking too much?
Absolutely. Barking is one of the most common issues, and it's the most common reason why councils get involved in your life if you've got a barking dog. So it's one of the most common complaints that councils receive from people. So barking can occur for so many different reasons, and it's really important that we understand what's causing the barking or why your dog is barking so that it can be addressed in the right way. So dogs can bark because they're territorial, because they might see people walking past all day. If that's the case, sometimes blocking that visual access can help reduce barking because it's not triggering that behaviour. Other dogs might bark because of separation anxiety. So if they're lonely or they're panicked because they're home alone, helping them cope with separation can help to reduce the barking behaviour. Sometimes it could be possums or something out in the backyard or another dog nearby that's barking. So it's really important for people to try and look at what's happening when their dog is barking and try and address that specific issue in order to reduce or stop the barking.
Kate, thank you for helping us today.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Kate Mornament, animal behaviourist. And of course, we could talk more about that. And of course, we could be talking much more about the policies that Sarah Ferguson was trying to ask Barnaby Joyce about. They are all very legitimate topics. But we're running out of time on the Conversation Hour. And you know what today is? It's Belgium's National Day. Ça plane pour moi. Ça plane pour There's Plastic Bertrand, Jean-Vaude Clandame, Tintin, the Smurfs. They are all Belgium. July 21 is Belgium's National Day, and we've got skin in the game. I was an exchange student in the French-speaking part. Producer Amber lived in the Flemish-speaking part. So we love Belgium. Do you love Belgium? Tell me about your Belgium experiences. 1300 222 774. A little celebration of Belgium today. What got you over the line with Belgium? What do you know most about Belgium? And especially going to Belgium as well. You know, it's all about France, it's all about Paris, but who's made the trip up to Belgium and what did you enjoy most? 1300 222 774. Joining me now to help celebrate Belgium is Dr. Pierre Van Osselaar, who's the Honorary Consul of Belgium in Victoria, if you don't mind. Hello, Pierre. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, good morning and happy Belgium Day.
Happy Belgium Day to you. Pierre, I'm sorry I did not know about the Office of the Honorary Consul of Belgium. Tell me, what is that job? What do you do? What do you get to do today?
What we do is mainly support the Belgian community here when there are issues arising, but also on the positive side. So, for instance, you know, we tend to participate to Belgian activities, represent Belgians on other activities. And so, like most honorary consuls, we also deal with emergencies when people need passports.
How big is the Belgian community in Australia?
Not
or in
very
Victoria?
Big at all.
No?
No, not big at all, no. So we've got a few thousand Belgians in Victoria, about 4,000, I believe.
Right.
And it compared to other European countries, particularly, you know, the neighbours like Holland, you know, the Netherlands and France, you know, they've got far more citizens here than the Belgians. Belgium is a relatively small country, it must be said, you know, with a relatively small population.
That's right. But punching above its cultural weight, I would say. We're asking people what they know of Belgium. And there are some big names here. 1300 222 774. What would be your nomination? Is it Jean-Claude Van Damme? Is it the beer? Is it Lef Duvel Chimay? Tell me about your first experience with Belgian beer. I can tell you mine. I was a teenager and it blew my head off. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. A small country, big cultural punch, and so many languages, Pierre. I was intimidated by the fellow high school students that I had who would, you know, just speak the lazy four or five languages.
Yeah, what happened in Belgium is because, of course, it's multicultural and multilingual, you know, we've got three official national languages, Flemish, Vlaams, French, and particularly in the Walloon part of the country, and then German as well.
Mm. So used to all that, and in fact the melting pot of Europe. How does it cope, in your view, as a Belgian? How do people cope with that? We often have this idea of, well, I'm not even going to get into the monoculture argument here, but how do you unify behind such a disparate range of languages and cultures?
Well, Belgium is a very strange country in a way because of the fact that it's at the crossroads of other countries, particularly historically. You know, when you look at Europe up to about 200 years ago, in terms of traveling, when it was by land, the easiest way to go east, west, or north, south was through Belgium. So Belgium was always one of those places of passage, which is why Belgium had very often governments from other countries that were installed in Belgium. Mm. So, for instance, you know, Charles Charles the Great, you know, of Charles the Fifth of Spain, was born in Ghent and ruled from Ghent. And so he had his empire going into South America and everywhere, but he was in Belgium, but he was a Spanish king.
Mm.
And Belgium has always been that kind of very strange area. And although the country that we've got now was started in 1831, Belgium is already referred to in antiquity, like in De Bello Gallico, so the book by Julius Caesar, he refers to the Belgians.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's got the footprints of Europe really all over it. A lot of Europe does, of course, but it seems to be this embodiment of the history of all of those peoples. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. This on text, Pierre, this reminds me, of course, that this texter loves Belgium, Ypres and the Menangate, of course, a very important place regarding World War One. So such a deep connection between Australia and Belgium in that way.
Very important. And like if you look at the Battle of Passchendaele, which was a very famous battle, there were an awful lot of Australians there. And we know that there's approximately 12,500 Australians that lost their lives in the trenches in Belgium.
Mm.
So that's an awful lot of people. And Belgium has always been very grateful for that, by the way, and certainly I am as well, because my family, of course, has lived through World War One and World War Two, and for the Belgians, Australia has always been that kind of, like a shining light in a way, because they came to help us from the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
And so that is something that we are certainly very grateful for. And I know that a lot of Australians then like to go and visit those places as well.
Oh, indeed. I've been there, and I can attest that you go there and essentially feel like you're personally, as an Australian, being delightfully welcomed to the area. 1300 222 774, if you've done that as well. Tom in Berwick, have you been to Belgium?
Well, I've spent a fair bit of time in Eindhoven, which I'm not sure if it's Belgium or the Netherlands, but it's very Dutchish. And I can tell you that we did a Vincent van Gogh tour. Like, it's about 20 points, and you do it on bicycles, and it takes you to 20 points of Van Gogh's life in a beautiful town called Noonan.
Right.
And it tells you where he painted, where he lived. There's a Van Gogh museum there. But you see, when you go to Eindhoven and you go to those places, there's like 70-year-olds and 80-year-olds, and everyone is on a push bike.
You know? Fantastic. Tom, yes, beautiful part of the world around there. And Tom reminds me that, in fact, the North got way more tourism than the South, especially when I was there. Look, Pierre, just as a last word, what would you say to the person who's texted that Belgium is to France what New Zealand is to Australia? What do you say to defend your country today, Pierre?
Well, an awful lot of famous Australians come from New Zealand.
Exactly. Well, someone else mentions Hercule Poirot came from Belgium. They're very, very adamant to tell you he was Belgian.
Oh, yeah, and people like Jacques Brel, people like that, you know, they're all Belgian. You know, and as you mentioned, Tintin, you know, Hergé, you know, that's Belgium.
Exactly. Right? And Frites. Yeah. I was told by my host family that Belgium was, in fact, the origin of French fries. They should be Belgian fries. Is that just hype?
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's it's the national dish. The frites.
Also on text, we have Belgium was the only team to score a goal against Spain in the World Cup. Pierre, were you happy, particularly with that Belgium v USA match?
Oh, yes. Very proud.
How will you be celebrating Belgium's National Day, Pierre?
I will definitely have a Belgian beer. Can I say that?
A Belgian beer, and I think we can talk about brand names of Belgian beer today. What's your favourite?
Well, the types of beer. So Belgium has an awful lot of different types of beers, not just brands. And you've got, of course, the Trappistan beers, you know, the Monk beers, and there's quite a few of them. There's a few brands there, mm-hmm. and then you've got the sour beers, you know, the Goes.
Mm.
And some of those are almost like wine. And I was lucky I was born. Actually, I lived for a long time, 500 meters from a brewery called Cartillon, which is one of the best known of those, you know, sour beers. And those beers are exceptionally good because they're exceptionally natural. You know, you can't make them anywhere else. So they're natural fermentation, and they tend to be, you know, natural products, you know, very, very few chemicals.
That's always, yes, sure, the best part about Belgian beer, no chemicals. Pierre, thank you, and vive la Belgique, and have a wonderful day today.
Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Dr. Pierre van Osler, and he is Honorary Consul of Belgium in Victoria. So many things that we can be grateful for out of Belgium. Here's another.
La 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 la
Smurfs came from Belgium as well. Diane from Gisborne, you lived in Belgium, did you?
Yeah, we lived in Belgium for 3 years.
Oh, where?
In a place called Mechelen, halfway between Brussels and Antwerp.
Oh, right. And what was it like? What do you remember most about living in Belgium?
Well, the best thing was is I was born in the Netherlands, so I could speak the language in the northern part of Belgium because they're Flemish speakers.
Yeah, yeah. Do you miss it?
Yeah, yeah. It was beautiful. We lived right in the, sort of the heart of town in a... Yeah, so it was lovely.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, how are you celebrating Belgium's National Day? Witlof, as someone has suggested?
Well, I didn't even know until I... listen to the radio when I was driving home.
There you go. Well, it's an excuse for everyone, Diane, to have, you know, a bit of beer, chocolate, mussels. Now, like Raf was this morning, I'm going to Ringwood. And if you're in Ringwood, as well as Bridget, we'll be there tomorrow at the Realm Library. I'll be there from 11. Come down and have your say. I would love to see you. Kath, it's coming up tomorrow on The Conversation Hour.